And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday,
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
And it's a new year, and we're back. Welcome back to the Athletic, and welcome back to the Hoops Adjacent episode of the Athletic NBA Show. David Aldrich here. My man Waz. Waz, where are you right now?
I'm in the friendly confines of Queens, New York.
I love it.
Hollis Hills, to be exact. People from Queens gonna know that I got my pinky up as I say that. but yeah, just checking in with the family for the holiday. I've been here for 12 days. Well, tomorrow will be my 12th day. I'm leaving in the morning.
Wait, Hollis, Queens is gentrified?
I mean, he's out now. So there's Hollis, but that's at the bottom of the hill. We're at the top of the hill right now.
They're above. Like, they're above
The Hollis, Hollis is literally 3 minutes away from here. It's not gentrified at all.
So when Run DMC said Christmas in Hollis, Queens, that's not where you
not even remotely. But funny enough, where I grew up on 214th Street in Hollis Ave is considered to be a neighborhood called Queens Village. Hollis starts at like 207, I believe. Mm-hmm. Don't kill me, Hollis people, but 207, 205 in Hollis, that's Run DMC, Hollis Crew, that's that whole area. But I was on the Queens Village side, so we never claimed Hollis, even though we were a quarter mile away.
Hollis adjacent.
Hollis adjacent, exactly.
Hollis
I like
adjacent.
What you did there,
wow.
D.A.
It's pretty good.
Man, so Marcus Thompson joins us as he frequently does because we love having Marcus on. You were defending Team Lightskin the other day. I noticed that. That's okay, though, because he dropped a 62-piece on somebody. So it's all good. It's all good. But I also noticed, we're taping this on Tuesday, on Monday night, looked like Kelly Oubre found his jumper, man. So that's, to me, I watched Kelly Oubre for 3 years in Washington. He is a very streaky shooter. Now, he can go, he'll be as cold as you can be.
That's a hell of a streak.
And yeah, that's a streak now. That's a streak for your ass,
for
right? But when he gets hot, he'll make some for a minute, too. So he may be starting a pretty good streak right now. That's just how he rolls with the jumper.
I mean, 4 for 6 feels like 40 for 60.
Right,
like,
right.
After you've been that cold. Like, I mean, he was so ice cold. Like, man. I mean, it got to the point where, like, you know, like somebody said, I forgot who said it on social media, like they were treating him like a because he made a three. Like, that's, it was pretty bad. Like, see, when he made a three, they started going.
You might have to edit that out, Jay.
Let's bring DA into the conversation here.
Welcome to Hoop.
Comma is
adjacent on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Turned it on and I heard Shaq with the barbs. It's like the boasting and braggadocio. I was transported right back into it. I was like, oh, this is great.
I think I rap better than Shaq.
With David Aldridge.
Oh, he's totally playing him.
Yes.
Yes. And then he kept their lungs out in front of everybody on TV.
Michael was not your friend.
It was popping in
there. Rodney Lambert.
So the Chicago and Detroit stuff, that was real.
That was real.
I mean, God forbid we don't have scholarship monies and can't pay for the charters for the water polo in Iowa.
Hoops
of Jason. Welcome to Hoop 5-4. We have ignition.
Stay mellow, my friends. He was going so badly that, like, every time he made a three, they went crazy. Like, right. They just lost it.
It was fake happiness.
Yeah, it was just like, you know, I mean, for real, it was just like, yo, he one for 32, I think he was, or something crazy like that. He could not make a three. Open, off the dribble, wide open, corner, top wing, it didn't matter. Yeah. He shot it. He was not making it. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, he goes, you know, 4 for 6 from three. Mm-hmm. It was just like out of nowhere. And let me tell you, there's one thing about the NBA, especially if you're on the perimeter. your whole life is different. Your family lineage is different if you're making shots. Like, your children look different. Like, everything is just drastically different when shots go in than when they don't. He was horrible when his shots was going in. He was doing other stuff. You know, he's playing defense and hustling and rebounding, blocking shots. But then when he made shots, it's like, all right, yeah, you worth $80 million. Like, one game later.
That is funny how that turns like that.
Know what? It's not just the shots, though, too. But I think it all feeds into itself, right? Where he's digging in from the perimeter and getting steals and getting out on the break. And once the ball starts flowing, all that other stuff, it just feeds it, right? Like, it feeds his defensive intensity. It feeds his energy because he's splashing jumpers now. And you know, that's understandable. And it definitely transforms the team.
Man, look, and you know what? It's the Kings, right? Like, let's...
Right.
The Kings in the middle of, like, you know, daddy drama, right?
Right. So I want to talk about that in a minute, but yes, go ahead.
But, you know, so it's not like, all right, let's not say he's arrived yet. But from the sense of how he'd been struggling, it felt like an arrival. And it literally changes it. It changes the rotations. Like, it changes... everything. It puts everything into perspective when he's playing like the player they thought they were getting. Before that, it was like, hey, should Damian Lee be starting? He has one good game. And it's like, okay, everything is settled where it should be. Because, I mean, there's nothing you can do when a dude is shooting 2 for 30. Like, what do you do? You can't win that way, no matter the circumstance. There's CYO teams who were making 3 for 30.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
no, it was so it true. Was brutal. And like you said, you all alone out there too. Like, there's no way you can't, like, you know, there's nobody that can shoot for you. You know what I mean? And the other team.
And you're doing it next to Steph, not like next to Westbrook or something, right? Like, you're doing it next to the greatest shooter of all time. So it's really like 3 for 1,000.
I think, I don't know if you wrote this or if Ethan wrote this about the incredible different pressure that other shooters, other players in Golden State feel because they're playing next to Steph and Clay to shoot the ball.
Oh, yeah. I wrote that. Yeah. It's something. It's been amazing. I remember there was one time, you know, they had Nick Young, right? Nick Young had one purpose. Like, it was like, yo, you need some shooting off the bench. Come in and shoot.
Yeah.
And I think this might have been before. It was might have been after they got – or no, at the same time they got Omri Caspi. This was when the Warriors were like, we need some shooting off the bench. They signed Omri Caspi and Nick Young. And Omri Caspi just – I mean, he just didn't shoot. He made the shots when he shot them. He was just pump faking himself out of threes. And Nick Young wasn't making shots. I remember being in a locker room, like, asking, like, yo – like, what happened to you? Why you can't shoot? And he's just like looking and he's got this little smile, like he's smiling. And then he's like, I just need to stop being a punk, huh? I was like, I mean, I wasn't saying that, but he's like, nah, I just need to stop being a punk. Like, I can shoot. So what? I'm on the court with them. Like, I can shoot. And it was like, this dude's name is Swaggy P and he shook about shooting. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is his whole thing.
His self-given nickname, by the way.
When you play next to, when Steph is on the court and Clay is on the court and KD is on the court, I mean, it feels like the erectile dysfunction of shooting, right? Like, you gotta, it feels like, yo, should I be shooting? Like, these other guys shoot.
Maybe I should let somebody like the else ED shoot.
you've seen like the most like certain guys, the most sure, confident guys shrivel up like, yo, I probably shouldn't be shooting. These are like the three of the greatest shooters. Maybe I should pass it. And they're like, dude, shoot it. And you're like, I don't know. Should it be me? And it messes with guys' heads.
You know what's so crazy, too, is that obviously Kelly Oubre couldn't shoot whatever the statistical equivalent of 2 for 30 is over the course of an entire season. Like, there's too many games. He's proven himself to be a baseline level shooter. And so, you know, it felt inevitable that would turn around. What I think is different, and I want to ask you about, Marcus, with Draymond coming back, because I think that Portland game is a little bit more instructive for what the season is going to be like, in that not only did Steph have the game of his life, because he did, but Draymond came back and he looked like Draymond. Like, he was extremely disruptive on defense. Just like in ways that you notice, like he's getting his hands on every pass. He's contesting people at the rim. He's switching out onto guys. He's doing all the things that made him Draymond, but he's also doing it over the course of an entire game, which yeah. I don't know that he's had to do since probably 2015. And that's why I think the Portland game is instructive, guys, because obviously Steph's not going to score 60 points a game, but I don't think they really kicked Portland's ass either with right. those two guys playing incredibly well. You know, yeah. and to me, that's what proves the problem of this team is like, I'm watching Draymond play at his peak. I'm watching literally Steph go human inferno, and they didn't dominate Portland. Like that score got away from them at the end, but Portland was in punching distance with them the whole game. I wonder if you guys disagree with that or if I'm just leaning on my own, you know, prediction that the Warriors were going to stink outside of Steph and Draymond's greatness.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely, you know, like Steph did all his work in the first quarter. He scored 21, and it was like they were up three, right? And it was mm-hmm. like, man,
he was going hard.
62.
He was going hard.
This wasn't like, yo, he got hot and he hit 10 threes. He was driving on three people. He yep. was getting to the line. Yep. He was taking contact. Yep. He was being aggressive. It was a very like hardcore, mm-hmm. you know, it was a 6'8". As a guy who's 6'8", it was his kind of 62. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't the typical, like, I hit 15 threes. I mean, he was right. 8 for 16, but he got hot later. So, yeah, it was a very grinding kind of game. And, you know, there were some moments, especially in the third quarter, where Dame got hot and it's like, yeah, they're in for it. And Steph closed. I do think, however, it mattered that they did it against a good team. Because they had beat Chicago, beaten Detroit, and they beat the Kings, right? So, right. you know, they're 4-3, but three of the wins are against bad teams. And I do think that's the blueprint. Like, beat the bad teams.
Yeah.
Take a couple from the good teams and just see where you at come March. Right. And what they did show was that if you got Steph and you got Draymond and a semi-decent Oubre and Wiggins, yeah. like that's good enough to not lose by 30. And if you're in a game, like that's where Steph comes in, right? If you're just in a game, now it's like, all right, Steph,
you gotta
be Steph. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the blueprint. They're probably not going to be the 2 seed, right? But the blueprint is, I mean, they handled the Kings, right? And if they were playing like they were playing recently against Chicago, they probably would have handled Chicago too. So you start seeing how, all right, yeah, they'll separate themselves from the bad teams, right? And then now they're in the mix. But you're so right. Like, we forgot about Dre, right? A lot of people forgot about Draymond. A lot of people thought Draymond was washed because he just was not inspired at all playing with like D'Angelo Russell, who don't even try on defense, right? Like Draymond's got to have some money in the middle of the table,
right?
In order for him, like otherwise he's wasting his time, right? Otherwise, like he's not bringing, like Draymond's like, look, I'm here to win and I'm going to help you win.
But I got,
and if it ain't no, no chips in the table, what are we doing? Right.
Yeah. So yeah, we all know they're, you know, they ain't intimidating anybody anymore, right? So that's going to kind of be their new normal is against good teams is going to be back and forth. But to your point, like if they're in games with good teams, then they have a chance to win their fair share of them, I think, you know, because you know, Steph is that good and can finish games, you know, and give you a chance to win those games. So,
but can they hold up is the question. Like, that's going to be the question. Can they hold up?
That's what I was going to get into with the Kings thing, which is insane, but it's the Kings, right? So we expect that from them. But I'm going to ask you this. I'm not suggesting they do this. But could Marvin Bagley help them? Like, could he help them? Could he be... Can he play the five? I don't know. I don't, you know, like.
He needs to play the five.
That's what I think, you know what I'm saying? But look, they got Wiseman. I get it. They don't need him. I'm not saying they need him. I'm just saying, could he help him? That's all I'm saying.
I mean, if you're going to create a role where Bagley is a backup big coming off the bench.
That's what I was about to say. Like, is he now the off the bench spark? Is that where his career is heading? From
that's pretty fast.
Getting picked up over Luka and Trae Young to you're a bench spark plug guy?
Well, I would just say this.
You might as well call him Darko, right?
Well, not Darko, because Darko didn't. I was going to say, what is Jahlil Okafor? What is he?
He's the guy that got Sam Hinkie fired.
But what is he? He's the guy that comes off the bench and scores.
Yeah,
okay.
He is.
There's a role for that in this league.
For sure.
There's a definite role for that in this league.
For sure.
You can play 10 years in the league doing that. There's no shame in it, is what I'm saying. Okafor didn't last long
as like a starter, right? It never materialized.
His defense was so horrible. People were just like, we can't do this. But I just think in year three, man, both, first of all, him and his camp are definitely not in the, they're not ready to take that truth serum of who this guy actually is. They still think, you know, they're on their way to a Brandon Ingram type of deal, you know, when that time comes, right? Because guess what? I was the number two pick in the draft. And I don't know that the Kings are quite ready to be like, well, we'll give him up for whatever it takes to get a Montrezl Harrell, right? Mm-hmm. Like, man, that's just, woo.
Well, I'll put it to you this way.
Man, yeah, that's more of a mindset than anything. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like, he's got to buy that. And
we have to believe it.
We've seen enough.
Like I'll put it to you this way. You know, I watch the Wizards a lot, obviously, because they're in D.C. And their starting center right now is Thomas Bryant. It was a guy that was waived by the Lakers, right? They waived him, and the Wizards picked him up 2 years ago. Thomas Bryant is shooting like 90% in the restricted area so far. He's like 36 of 40, some number like that, in the first week of the season.
The dude makes a third of his shots, literally.
Right. Right.
Or two-thirds of his shots, literally.
And then, but he's shooting almost 40 from three. You know what I mean? So, and he's shooting like three threes a game. Like, he's really upped his volume of shooting threes, and he's making more than enough of them. So my point is, if you ask the Wizards, like right now, would you trade Thomas Bryant for Marvin Bagley? You know what they would say? Probably not. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I'm not saying that to hate on Marvin Bagley. I'm saying it's not like you just plug and play a guy like that in anybody's rotation, and he automatically is going to play 35 minutes. Where? You know?
D.A., I completely agree with you on him.
Yeah, and it's not, and I know I don't want to hear people saying you hating on Marvin Bagley. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying there isn't an obvious place for him. It's not like there's like 10 teams and he would automatically be the starting center and play 30 minutes a game. That's my point. Like, if you say trade me, you got to have a place to be traded to that makes sense.
Also, D.A., I'm going to need cats to understand that just because you think you're whatever you think you are, when you request a trade, you're not James Harden. You don't have seven suitors who are willing to give up quality stuff.
Right.
You're just a guy. Yeah. You can request a trade, but nobody wants you. This is like the Kevin Love special. Last year when he was beaming balls at guys' heads because he was sick of playing with the young kids who, understandably so, those kids are freaking ball hogs, play no defense. And like, I can understand why he wouldn't want to play with them after going to four straight finals or whatever it was. But it's also like, Kev Love, like, I love you, but like, you're overpaid. Nobody wants you.
And Bagley doesn't even have that problem. He's still on his rookie contract, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So there could be like, I'm sure there, you know, if we broke down every team in the league, I'm sure we could find five places where it would make sense, right? Like, I mean, Chicago, I mean, what's his name? Carter's getting outplayed by my man off the bench. I forget the kid's name. I'm so sorry. Yeah, Wendell Carter's getting outplayed right now. And so you could make a case for a place like Chicago for Bagley. Yeah, you could. There are places where you could make a case, but it's not like it's half the league is my point. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, no,
so just be careful who you talk about.
If you're a Warriors, who would you rather have?
Daniel Gafford. That's who it is. Who's outplaying Wendell Carter in Chicago right now. Daniel Gafford's playing really well for them.
If you're the Warriors, how do you rank this? Is it, like, you got Wiseman, they got Looney, they got Eric Paschal is the new, like, small ball five they use in the second unit, and Bagley. Like, where's Bagley ranking on that depth chart?
I mean, that's what I was saying. Like, are there enough minutes at the backup four and five And maybe occasionally, because of matchups, if somebody comes out small, maybe you could play back. You could start Bagley at the five against certain lineups. I don't know. But are there enough minutes to make it sensible? Not even like, I'm not even saying they should do it. I'm not saying that. I'm just curious because I just wonder, you know, could someone like that help them?
I don't think he's their type of player. I just don't believe he fits there.
Yeah, but the thing is for me is like, for big men, like I picked Wiseman to win Rookie of the Year before the season simply because he's playing with Steph. Like when you're playing with Steph as a big man, you get to play with so much airspace because people are so focused on Steph when you set a screen on him. Like you are so free to do things. And Steph is a willing passer. He going to get you for duck-ins and all of this stuff. I think Steph would make him look amazing, right? But, you know, he's so bad at defense. And it's like, I don't know. I think back in the days, he's clearly a four-man, right? Like back when I started watching basketball, he's distinctly a four-man.
Back when Larry Johnson was taking 17 seconds in the post.
Right. But in today's game, he's a tweener. Because I don't think he can guard four or fives. And he damn sure not going to guard the three. So it's like, he can't guard either position. So like, what are we doing with this guy? You know?
Yeah.
It's tough, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do they not see this though in the Bagley camp and say, let's, you know, put your head down. Let's, you know what I'm saying? Like you only, like if you're Harden, I get it. Even Harden might've heard his trade value, right? Like, demanding trades from Lil Baby's party.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But like you're Bagley. It's like, I mean, if you want out, somebody's got to sit down and map out a plan that says,
that's what I'm saying.
Let's probably not make my value worse.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
There has to be a plan. There has to be, here are the teams that we think make the most sense for me or for him, you know, not just trade me and expect half the league to drop what they're doing and say, oh my God, Marvin Bagley's available. Let's go get him. You know?
So, again, but what's
it? Not a criticism. It's just.
But DA, I want to ask you this because obviously you got the knowledge, like when you're a new regime and this is not your guy, but he's in his third year. And I'm assuming Vivek had a lot of influence in him getting there too. Right. Like he's not my guy, but he's definitely a Vivek guy. If Vivek was cool with taking him all the way at number two, like
a Vlade pick. I mean, it was Vlade's
pick. Was it Vlade's pick?
And Vlade's not here anymore. Right. Though, to your point, like, though.
I mean, if we could say it's a Vlade pick, then they should have no problem figuring out a way to get him out of there. But I would think that the owner had to like him at least a decent amount for them to use that draft capital on him. Like,
and Rashawn Holmes does look good.
He's killing him.
That's my point. Like, why would you not play Rashawn Holmes? You know what I mean? Like, he's playing well. he's putting up good numbers. So, I don't know.
And do you get to just clean house like that? I don't know.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what Monty McNair's thoughts are on this, and I'm sure he's still kind of trying to figure out what his thoughts are on this. So, but I don't expect to trade anytime soon. I was just wondering about that. But so Draymond's looked good since he's been back.
Oh yeah, Draymond. You know, his wind was shot at first. Mm-hmm. He was playing short minutes, but Like, I mean, this dude is literally an assistant coach. I mean, that's number one. You know, like, he's literally coaching dudes. You know, he's running film sessions, right? He's constantly in James Wiseman's ear. Anthony Slater was, just, you know, writing a piece just about how Penny Hardaway was telling him, like, yeah, everything Draymond tells you, you need to listen. Like, I don't care. Don't worry about how it sounds. Like, yeah, if he, yeah, whatever, you listen to that guy. And you know what? There was a time, I don't know if you guys remember, when the Warriors got Jordan Bell, and it was like for a moment there when, you know, he had a good game and Bulls fans were all pissed off, like, how you sell him to the Warriors? And it was like, uh-oh, this might be Draymond's replacement, right? And there was a bit part of Draymond who's like, oh, hold on. Oh, y'all found my replacement, huh? Like, yeah, we'll see. And then Draymond, like, at some point realized he wasn't a threat. And was like, all right, let me put my arm around the guy. Like, OG Draymond, 30-year-old Draymond, is just putting his arm around a guy, right? It's not like, yo, whatever, you think you might be a threat. He sees all these youngsters as the elongation of his career. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So he's really bought into
I like
management,
that.
Coaching,
I love
like
that.
Heart. And there's just absolutely no question. Him and Steph have a chemistry. I know it's Splash Brothers, right? I know it's Steph and Clay. Like, I got it. It's the Light Skin Coalition. It's the greatest shooting backcourt. But, man, there's something about him and Draymond on the court. Like, Steph and Draymond together.
No, they got a great chemistry. The chemistry is unreal. Great. Yes.
There's no question. Is the reason Steph went off had something to do with the fact that somebody who speaks his basketball love language was on the court with him.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there was definitely something there. But Draymond brings all that. I'm telling you, this dude, you put some chips on the table.
No, 100%.
Up. You give him Amari Spellman and D'Angelo Russell. He's like, yo, I'm out. Like,
he's a big time, big money player. There's no question about it.
There's no question.
And he's a very good player. So
my thing
you
is,
bring
Marcus,
that dude the pool that's for fun with Monopoly money.
But is he
playing.
Doing this
like,
all season, Marcus? Is he playing like this every single game? Because another thing that people forget, I think even in 2016, the 73 win season, there were games where the Warriors gave it the old 2.5 quarters of effort. Or even less than that.
But it worked, right? And they were chilling in the fourth quarter.
What I'm saying, Marcus, is that they were so good that Draymond was not asked to be the freaking apex predator that he's capable of being for long stretches of games. It was like, you know what, guys? All right, let's stop playing with Milwaukee right now. Let's put the screws to them and go home with our, you know, 9-point victory, even though we probably should have won by 25. I wonder if Draymond can sustain this throughout the course of a long season, because he has to do this for them to win all game long.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, there is no taking some of the game off and turning it on and they still win. He has to carry them defensively and as a playmaker. I wonder if he has that in him still.
I think that's why he's teaching. Because at some point, these young guys got to fill in. And like, if you're watching Draymond, it's still a measured form of defensive dominance, right? He's the OG that's like winning on IQ.
Yeah.
Like, he's just all he's really doing is anticipating and being in the right spots.
Yes.
We aren't seeing the Draymond yet who's just like, yo, I'm gonna make sure Blake Griffin has a terrible game. Like, we haven't seen that Draymond yet, right? Like, where he's just like, yo, I don't like this dude, so I'm gonna take his heart. Like, we're not seeing that guy yet. He's kind of, you still, like, you can be a good defender just by knowing where you're supposed to be, right?
Yeah.
But I do think part of him is banking on the development of James Wiseman, like, playing with Oubre, who's, you know, he'll get after it on defense. And even Wiggins is really good, low-key. Like if he's got some dogs around him, I think he could pick his spots better. And I think that's why he's doing so much teaching. So he could, you know, give you a good, hard first quarter, chill second and third, let the young bucks go. And in the fourth quarter, if it's a game, I got something left. But the management of their energy and minutes is clearly going to be, like, the determination of how long they go. Same with Steph. Steph can't dribble through three people for 72 games,
right?
36 minutes a game. One of the things out here is Steph always sits the first 6 minutes of the second and fourth quarter. But especially while they were struggling, everybody's like, yo, like, Can you bring him in earlier, right? Like, yo, 8 minutes. Like, but Steve doesn't care. Like, the house is burning. Like, right. Babies is crying. Steph's still on the bench. Like, he right. brought him in at 7 minutes against Portland, and it was like the greatest concession of all time. He's like, all right, I'm going to give you an extra minute of Steph. But Steve knows, like, I'm going to burn out Steph. You played this dude 39, 40 minutes against boxing ones. Like, I'm not killing my guy like that. Y'all just got to figure it out around him.
All right, so
I think that's the key. You got to, these other guys got to figure it out around him. So otherwise they will burn out.
You mentioned Wiggins. What are you seeing with him?
I'm seeing Wiggins, who definitely still loves the mid-range fadeaway too much, yeah. But he is driving and he is posting more. He's actually been really good at that. When Steph started playing well, right? It's like, all right, Steph's got this. But then there are these spots in the game where somebody else needs to do something, needs to make a shot. He's been really good at that shot, right? Mm-hmm. That the other team's going on a run, like, number two guy needs to step up right here. And that has always been Klay Thompson. It's always Klay, right? Yeah. No matter what, it's always Klay. He can hit one or two of those shots, but he's been really solid defensively on the perimeter, you know, on the wings. Like, he's not guarding Kawhi yet. I think all this needs to be couched in the fact that they beat four bad teams, right? Like, so, you know what I'm saying? Like, they beat Chicago, Detroit, and Sac, and Portland, which is, you know, I've always thought was fairly suspect. Like, they could be eight, they could be four. Like, we don't know what Portland we're going to get, right? Like, so he's been really good defensively. And when he's, like, in the post, he's really good in the post. Sometimes he goes to the basket. He still gets a little lost. They still don't see Steph, right? This is the funniest development of the whole thing. It's like slapstick. It's like a John Ritter comedy watching them, like, Steph is running to the corner and his ball's coming, and Steph realizes that they don't even know where I am. Like, they don't even know who I am. And that's why we saw last game, Draymond is, like, dribbling a ball. He's jumping and he's screaming, trying to get them dudes to move because it's, like, four guys on one side. And Steph's trying to run to the corner. So there's still a lot of that. But, he's Wiggins, you know? He's going to get you 20. Like, he's going to get a couple boards. Like, he's Wiggins, you know? And really, that's kind of what they need. They got him under this, like, under the auspice of, we're going to put him in a row. We're not going to ask him to carry the franchise.
Yeah,
Klay goes down, and obviously he needs to have a bigger role. But the key with Wiggins is to keep him in that safe space.
Yeah.
Like, yo, we're not asking you to go get 30. Like, that's not what we want you to do. We want you to play good defense. We want you to understand our offense. We want you to take a guy when you got him. We want you to post. Like, we're going to give you the rock. You're going to get your touches. Just stay in the lane. And you can see him, like, figuring it out. But, man, he is addicted. Like, he is addicted to that fadeaway, too. That 21-footer that the Warriors just don't take.
Right.
He loves them. Like, it's crazy. It's like watching a dude try to give up sweets. Like,
well,
this ain't happening.
Right. He's got to learn. Right. I mean, like, that's kind of unconditional with them. Like, you can't take that shot. At some point, you got to stop taking that shot. Right.
Like, who takes this? Like, it was KD and Klay. But these dudes are like 60% mid-range.
Exactly. Right. That's like, them.
Right. Nobody takes the shot on the Warriors. Like, Steph is starting to take it because it's open. It's like,
Steph
is three or the rim, right? Like, like, Wiggins is like out here. It's the like, I got my man. I'm spinning. Step back fade.
Right.
Like, Steve Kerr hates those shots. So
The
more he can get that out of his diet, he'll be better.
And I'll say this for Wiggins. He's getting to the cup. He just hasn't been finishing, which, you know, is like a broken record for his career.
Baby
but
steps,
why?
Baby steps, man. Get to the cup.
To me, I'd rather see you miss at the rim than some fadeaway step back nonsense.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Stop doing that. At least you have a chance of getting fouled at the rim. Nobody's
part of the reason they beat Portland. Part of the reason they beat Portland is because he was just like, yo, I'm posting up McCollum, and McCollum got two fouls and he was out and they didn't get down early. Like, that's a big part of it. He's like, look, I'm gonna make these dudes have to guard, and because he's 6'7", McCollum couldn't guard him in the post. Like, really just that alone, just because he didn't take the 20-footer, he went to the post and CJ McCollum got a foul trouble. Like,
so
that's all you need from him.
So Golden State, as we tape this, is 4-3, right? So, I mean, I mean, they
oh what?
They're not one in six.
Let's go.
They were supposed to be like, oh, they're going to be a bottom feeder again.
Go ahead.
They're 4-3. You know. You know. So I mean,
they'll get into the play-in.
Yeah, check in. I mean, if you're
saying
them,
like it's a failure, like that's a victory. What you mean?
Right. I'm like, that's a good thing, isn't it? If they got into the play-in, like, I mean, with this squad,
it is a good thing. 100%, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
I'm just saying they're the fifth seed and they just getting started, so they could end up two. That's all I'm saying. They could end up two. Until they play the Clippers, right? Then it's like, reminder.
Right. All right. So Steph apparently does get on Twitter and does see that people were clowning him and then just drop 62 because he feels like it. I was surprised that he copped to it though. I didn't realize he would ever. I thought Steph, you know, Steph, one of them above it all kind of dudes, you know, like, you know, he's not like one of them. He's not like Michael Jordan, and I took that personally. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I think Steph, you know what Steph does? He likes, I'm being 1,000% honest. I think Steph likes it a little bit. I think there's a part of him. This dude loves the NBA. Like, yeah. He loves basketball. He was raised in this.
Yeah.
I think all of that is like, he doesn't want you to think that he's bothered by it or he's mad about it, right?
But he doesn't, he doesn't want people to think that he doesn't know anything.
But he is aware of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, he's like, y'all thought I was bad. Remember a couple years ago when he just started the season, he was gunning, he was getting 30, it's like, it was crazy, and he's like, dude, what's up? He's like, man, y'all didn't even have me in the MVP conversation, like, y'all think I'm washed already? Like, he hears the stuff, he likes the whole, the NBA culture, like, he's with it, like, you know, when I remember they were ripping his shoes, he was laughing at the memes, he's like, this was the favorite meme, remember the Chef Curry, like,
yes.
He's all in on NBA thing. Like, he's really an NBA guy. He just don't want you to think that, like, oh, he's bot, like, Steph is struggling because you're talking about him. So he'll acknowledge it. He acknowledged it more than what I expected. Like, he's like, cue the Jordan meme. You know what I'm saying? Like, that type of stuff. I took it personally. The jokes and the banter and the back and forth and the camaraderie and the fraternity, like, he's all in on that. 1,000%. Wow. It's what makes it fun. Like, but you got to remember, he was raised in this stuff.
That's true.
Like, he's behind the scenes when his dad is. And imagine the conversations he heard between Mark Jackson and those guys and the banter. Like, all that stuff makes him part of it. So, like, he hears it. It's fun. He go out and score 60. Like, he just wants you to think it don't change anything for him. Like, as long as you think that, then he's good. I think.
Man. This is fascinating.
Because we still haven't even talked about what the it was, right? Which is people trying to say this season on the internet and in some mainstream media outlets that this season is some kind of referendum on Steph's career or his contribution to the game as a superstar. And if Steph can't carry this team, then he was never really that real to begin with. And all this other crap. Which I just reject out hand. I'm sorry. Just because Steph Curry is like, you know, just because Steph Curry can't take Kelly Oubre and Andrew Wiggins. So again, two guys that I need to remind people, like, they have never been main ingredients on eighth seeds. Or no, Wiggins was on 1/8 seed that Jimmy Butler spearheaded. Okay.
Right.
So Wiggins was a main cog on 1/8 seed. Oubre never.
As a third best player.
Right.
Okay. As their third best player. These guys have never been asked to carry water for anything significant in their lives in the NBA.
No, that's true.
So, that's their track record. So guys who've never done it consistently for any type kind of winner, whether you call it a mid-tier type of Utah, I wouldn't even say Utah's mid-tier. I'd say something like Portland, like a Portland mid-tier or, you know, something like the Pacers, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they've never been main cogs on a team like that. Right. So all of a sudden, Steph's supposed to get them and turn them into what? Like, I don't understand. I don't.
It's such a weird conversation anyway. That. Like, what are we talking about? Like, it's this feels like that conversation where you talk about, man, my hood was rough, and then somebody says, my hood was worse than that. It's like, dude, we bragging about poverty? Right. Like, this is crazy. Like, right. The conversation is really, but you've never had it so bad. Right. Like, what are we talking about? The dude has three championships, two MVP. Like, that's how we used to judge people. Well, now we're judging them by who has the worst struggle and made it to the playoffs. That's really what we're determining now. If right. that's the case, there's a whole lot of former NBA players who need to be in this conversation, right?
Exactly.
Where's Ron Harper when he was struggling leading the Cavs, right? Like, right. to the first round. Like, let's get a whole lot of players in here. And hey,
where's Dale Ellis?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Right. It's a whole bunch of players. Like, hold on, man. Like, I had a bad team. Monte Ellis is like, hold on, playboy. Like, where we at? Include me in here. Jason Richardson, let's go. Like,
there's also this, I think, obviously, there's this unspoken, you know, just jealousy, whatever you want to call it, of Steph, and it's always been there. We all know why. And it's just, I just think it's so unfair. It's like the standard is so ridiculous that you're trying to hold this guy to. This happens. This happens. Like Kerr said, this is the NBA, right? What you're doing now, this is the NBA.
This is the NBA.
And this is real.
It's
this
a couple of things. I think it's the unanimous MVP thing pissed people off.
Yeah, it's
like Russell didn't do it.
Especially like the pros, that like the former players and the current players. Like,
Russell
that was
didn't
huge.
Do it. Wilt didn't do it. Mike didn't do it. Magic didn't do it. Kobe didn't do it. Bron didn't do it. How the hell are you supposed to tell me the first unanimous MVP is this, you know, 175 pound light skin dude? You can't tell me that. No.
Right.
Who prays?
Right.
And people have been so pissed about that ever since, where I'm just like, guys, he was clearly the MVP of that season. Nobody deserved a vote for first place. He was that his season. His team broke win records. His play on the court was on another level. He was clearly the deserving MVP. There were no arguments for anybody else.
There was no debate.
So, of course, it was unanimous. I think that drives a lot of it.
He made 400 threes and shot 50% from the field.
Like, I think that drives a lot of it. And I think, quite frankly, people don't have enough respect for what Draymond did, what Klay did, what Bogut did, what Iggy did, what Livingston did, what, you know, even Barbosa did to make those teams all-time great. Like, that's the problem I think people have, is just like, you know, when Steph's doing all of that running around in circles type of stuff, you have to have players with the instincts to find him. So not only do they have those passing instincts, and then when you're talking about somebody like a Bogut, somebody like Iggy, these are elite defensive players. Yeah. Klay Thompson, elite defensive players. Like, put some respect on these people's names, bro. What the fuck? Like, yes, Steph was great, but what made him even greater, these guys elevated what he did. They really elevated it. Like, Bogut, not just passing from, you know, from the high post, but he was an elite rim protector. Like,
But it don't count if you get rich unless you was hella poor first. Like, if you get... If you get rich off middle class, it don't really count.
Like, yo, like,
if you ain't from the slums,
it's crazy to me.
Here's what I have faith in. Like, I have the utmost faith in this. You know, at some point there will be some dude who's probably in like middle school right now who will come in the game, and they'll be talking about how great he is. And then it'll be the people who are on social media now will be old, and they'll be in the barbershop talking about, man, you thought that dude was something? You should have seen Steph Curry, right?
Yeah, like, right.
None of this stuff ever lasts. Yeah, right? Facts, 20 years, they'll be talking about Steph. That dude used to walk in the gym and he didn't miss. I saw him make 105 shots one time in a row, right? Like, it'll come around.
Like,
right?
Like I'm watching Wiseman the other night, and I'm like, he ain't no David Robinson.
but Steph is going to be the most exaggerated guy of all time.
Oh,
he's
going
to be like, yo, he literally used to shoot from the other three-point line.
From, from three-quarter court. He used to just pull up. Same form and everything.
Yeah, perfect.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Hey, I want to ask you real quick. You did a great piece on Matt Barnes and his second life, third life, whatever you want to call it, man. I just want people to know how good that piece was, man. And just, I like Matt Barnes. I mean, Me too. Matt and I were cool. We never had no great, it wasn't like we, there was no drama, nothing. When I asked him to do something, he did it. He was fine. And so I didn't have a great, I didn't have a relationship with him. So I'm not like standing for like my friend or anything like that. But I always felt like Matt got a bad rap because I thought Matt was a really good teammate for a lot of years on a lot of good teams, And so just wonder what that was like, just kind of chopping it up with him for a little bit. And obviously he's having this really great second career.
Well, you know what? Matt Barnes is an anomaly to me. Like, I cover Matt Barnes, right? Like, when he was We Believe Warriors, like, yeah. That's when I was the beat writer. So, me and Matt's been cool. It's just amazing to listen to all the smoke and watch him. I just want to know, how are you good at this? It's, you know who he reminds me of? He reminds me of you, Waz. It's like, yo, I went to school for this stuff. Like, I've been working my whole life to get good at this, and you guys just walk on and are good at it, right? It's like, it's a little irritating. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, stop, you know how many books I've read? How many mentors I've had? Like, I'm listening to Matt Barnes, and I'm like, hey, he's got Steven Jackson in his ear. And they're having these crazy conversations, and it's like, yo, that was a good question. That was a good question. And yo, way to keep the topic going. It was just like, seriously, yo, how are you good at this?
Right, that's crazy.
And yeah, he's really good.
Yeah, it's good.
He's talking to Steph, and I'm like, dude, I didn't get Steph to talk about this.
Yeah,
like,
right.
It's just a lot of that, and I just wanted to know how he's good at it.
Yeah. He's a really thoughtful guy.
For me, that was the genesis of it, trying to figure out how did this dude get good at this?
Mm-hmm.
And when he started talking, I was like, you know what? It makes a lot of sense, man. What he's seen and what he's been through, what he's done. Like, I get why you wouldn't be intimidated in an interview. I get why you ain't afraid to ask a question that needs to be asked, right? Like, right, I understand that. Like,
right.
The freedom and the liberation that he has, because it's like, whatever, I don't care. Y'all know me. Y'all know who I am. Y'all know all my drama. Y'all know all my dirt, right? You know what I've done. Like, let's talk about it. I'm going to talk about yours. You know my mind. Like, it made a lot of sense the way he put it together. But mostly, I was just curious, like, how are you so good at this with no training? Like, if I could write about Waz, I'd ask the same thing. Like, what the heck? This don't even make sense. Like, you should not. Like, you should have spent 4 years to Clark Atlanta. You should have, like, $50,000 in debt. You should be, you should be going to all these little journalism conventions and meetings and NABJ panels. Like, you got to pay your dues.
Mark, you got to be a beat writer for a shitty team for 5 years.
You know what I'm saying? Like, cover some trash. Get on a high school football beat. Right, right. You know what I'm saying? Like, you just walk in, like, trying to sun us.
Oh, man. You know what's crazy, Marcus? You definitely didn't need no journalism convention to learn how to do what you do, bro. It's just about
We
didn't
know that then. Like, we've had our dues. Right. You know what I'm saying? But
Matt Barnes, honestly, watching this show is just, honestly, and it's not to diss people. A lot of people just don't think about things past the surface. And I find that, and I'm not afraid to say that about most player commentators and analysts, is most of them aren't really getting beneath the surface. And honestly, we don't need them to oftentimes, right? Like, they have good insights on other things. But Matt Barnes, I find to just be like, he's really thinking about this stuff in a 360 degree way, right? Like, or three-dimensional, whichever one of those metaphors I'm supposed to use. And saying? Like, that's what impresses me. Like, he's coming at it from every single side, and it's just, it's really cool to see. And it's not just all the smoke. He's my favorite guy on the jump. When I see him on the jump, he's my favorite ex-player on the jump by far. And let's face it, there's a couple of Dookies or other type of ex-players, you know, that we might have assumed would be better at it than Matt Barnes. And they're not. They're not better at it than him. So it's just dope to see, man.
No, it's great.
I thought the cool part was we were talking about him and D Fish made up and the reason why and how they're co-parents. Yes. And I was like, yo, that's like the willingness that's to just real. Be a grown man.
Like, I said, it's like, the answer was a three-dimensional answer. It wasn't this caricature of these ballers fighting over, you know what I mean? Like, it was like he explained why it upset him. And I was like, yeah, that makes sense. What you just said makes sense. I totally understand why you would have that reaction.
DA, you know why that's crazy? Because I still haven't forgiven D Fish for that. D Fish is wild for that. I'm sorry, bro. That was crazy, bro.
There's, and it's not even about D Fish. It's just about the whole culture of. There's people like, I've always said, this is what I've always said. Like, you have a best friend. Everybody's got a best friend, right? I have a best friend. You have a best friend or somebody that was your best friend at one point in your life, right? And you know they're a woman. And because of that, because that person's your best friend, like, that woman's just eliminated. Like, you don't even like.
Yeah, it's over.
You just don't even think of her. Like, I don't. Like, that's just like, okay, that's his wife or his girlfriend.
Am I having deja vu? Or I just feel like we talked about this.
Maybe we talked. Did we talk about this before? Maybe we did. Like,
okay, I think I remember hearing you say, like, I can hear your voice in my head say, well, why? Why are you doing
Like, there's a million other women out there, you know? Like, bruh, I just wouldn't. You just. Like,
I said it at the time and I'll say it again. And Jade is my witness. I remember when the reports came out of this and D Fish was coaching the Knicks at the time. And I was like, he can't coach that team anymore. Those players are not going to respect him for doing that. Right. Like, that is beyond the pale. Like, that wasn't just his little shorty, his little plaything that he had in some city. That was his wife, who he had kids with, who you ate dinner at their crib. And you're now dating her.
Right.
And he lost the locker room right after that. Like, literally right after that. Because it's just unconscionable.
But I respect.
But think how mature you gotta be for him to be like, my son said they love him, and now we're co-parents.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that was such a grown up answer. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, okay,
we're cool. We're like, he's at my kid's game. Like, man, that's
facts.
Yeah, we're gonna cover the fights. We gotta cover that too.
100%.
We're gonna cover the drama. We need to cover the reconciliation. That's just what I believe.
Right. No question. No question. Well, my man, look, I appreciate you coming on as always, because I know you have 87 other podcasts that you do, and I appreciate you like spending time on my little show. Always, always a pleasure. Waz, safe travels home, my brother.
Hey, Waz, I'm sorry. I don't hate you that much anymore. I'm over it. You know, I'm a big fan. Like, I was initially bitter about it. But I
y'all made up on my show, man. I love that. That's real. That's real. All right, y'all. Back at it next week. Leave that 5-star review if you haven't.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.